You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today. Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
Glad you've chosen to tune in to DLC. Especially if you're one of our geeks in sneaks using this podcast to power you through a workout or a run. We're going to be with you in your ear holes for 90 plus minutes of gaming goodness because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week delivered the way we love it to be. And that is completely free thanks to listeners like you. Patrons who have supported this show over at patreon.com/DLCpod. We are extremely grateful. After 8+ years of doing this show, last week we announced our Patreon and then promptly botched that launch by not having the page up when the show went live. In my hubris, I thought that Patreon would approve our show, boy, a lot faster than they did. But luckily they did. You know, it only took them a little over 24 hours. And I thought it was going to take, you know, a couple of hours. But that's okay. The Patreon did get approved. And so many of you have just overwhelmed us with the love and support. Messages that I've got on Twitter, messages that I got through Patreon. So many folks just really happy to help and make sure the show continues. And Christian, you know, before we get to our guest, we have an awesome guest this week. We have awesome content, but I just want to give people a little quick update on how the show is changing and what the Patreon means. And the fact that we get to continue making the show, we now own this show, which is pretty cool. We're talking about, you know, we have paid someone to develop a new logo for the show. We're going to be working on that. We are talking about maybe updating after 8 years the opening song, and yeah. I you know, I'd love to hear listeners' ideas about that. I know this song has been in your ear holes for 8 years. But we also don't own that. As you know, Elon Musk has used it along with a lot of other people. It's just royalty-free music that we've sort of associated ourselves with. So we may be having an actual song written for us by awesome musicians. Although, you know, we want to be open to our patrons, what they think. If you guys want to keep us using this, you know, royalty-free music, maybe we'll just stick with it. We aim to please. But... There are a number of things, and we've heard from also a number of folks as part of our patron tiers is that there is going to be now what we will lovingly refer to as paid DLC. This is the free DLC, but there will be paid DLC, the show we were calling the Parting Gift Show. And I've heard from, Christian and I both have heard from a number of you who are sad to the idea that the parting gift at the end of the show that we've been doing for many years now will be broken off and behind a paywall. as a Patreon reward. And we hear you. We hear you. This is an evolving idea. The idea is that we will be doing extra content for patrons, more show. We think doing the parting gift a little bit longer, a little bit more in depth is the best idea, but we will continue to figure that out and make the best show we possibly can in both regards, both the free version and the paid version. So,
I mean, I pitched doing just, it'd be the show, the same show, but at 4K 120. So like, it's just like a little crisper.
Yeah. The performance option or the fidelity option, right? That'd be really good. You do not want to hear us at fidelity though. Boy, our voices do not hold up. They do not withstand the fidelity.
So many filters. I mean, I have blur effects on so many things right now.
You can't up-res this. You know what I'm saying? but the other thing is, you know, we kind of talked about last week being the soft launch. So this is all, you know, we're going to have the first parting gift show to patrons this week, and we are delivering all these things. We want to reach out to all the folks at the Hype Train tier and make sure we are saying your name correctly. We want to shout out all those folks. It's just an overwhelming number of people, and we're so delighted and grateful for that show of support. But we won't be doing the Hype Train shout outs at the end of this episode because we wanted to make contact with all those folks and make sure that, you know, we're pronouncing your name correctly. You want us to say your name, how, you know, you want us to say your first and last, or how you want to be shouted out. So all that is happening. We hope that you can bear with us as the show kind of, you know, enters a new era. And that is all possible because of so many of you that answered our call and said, hey, this show is worth supporting, is worth making sure it continues. So thank you. I should also note, there are some folks who are saying that, you know, oh, the lowest tier on the Patreon is $5. That's not the least money you could donate. A, we never want anyone to donate any dollars at all if it would put you in any kind of financial hardship. That was never anything we would want. But also, just because the perks begin at $5 doesn't mean you can choose not to, you know, you're not able to support the show at a lower dollar amount. You can give whatever dollar amount you want on Patreon. So if just symbolically you'd like to support the show at $1, we would be grateful and honored to take that dollar every month. That is certainly something you're able to do. And again, if you are not financially able to do that, that is fine too. There are other ways to support the show. Tell your friends, give us a positive review on your platform of choice. Apple Podcasts is a great one, but wherever you get this podcast. So those are ways you can support the show for free as well. Christian, you want to add anything? We both have been texting all week, just talking, or the last few days. It's not been a full week because I botched the launch, everybody, but we have just been so happy and honored, frankly, about the level of support and just the kind wishes that people have sent us, and it's just been awesome to see. So thank you.
Yeah, and I'm excited for 4K 120 personally. Like that is still my I mean, I'm just excited, honestly, that our eShop isn't being closed, right? Like that's what.
Well, stay tuned.
In order to close
the eShop, you have to have opened the eShop, Christian. That's the prerequisite. All right. So, ladies and gentlemen. We also do a video game podcast. Thank you for thank you for the support. We will make a video game podcast, and we have someone who has sat through this horrible preamble patiently.
A guest years in the making.
Literally years in the making. We have wanted to have this person on the show for literally the years. Someone we think very highly of. You know that DLC always stands for your downloadable Kanata and your downloadable Christian. But this week, I'm excited because DLC stands for Dog of Lewd Countenance. Because we have Vice President at Naughty Dog, Arnie Meyer, joining us for the first time. Arnie, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on. Yeah, it has been years in the making. We first talked about this in 2015, so 7 years later. We're here. Yeah. Right at the time of transition for you. going on to Patreon, like
you wanted
timing.
To wait until you had to sit through 10 minutes of us talking about you know,
but literally logistics. Second, so to people that are going to be like, Christian is a Naughty Dog shill, he got paid to do a podcast for them, that's fine, you can keep saying that to me, but also as Arnie just said, 2015, this podcast started in 2014, year two, I was like, you know what, this show's good enough that I'm going to try to make this happen. And we've been emailing, and I don't want to throw you under the bus, Arnie, but hockey is a big deal. I had to work around hockey schedules. The only reason I did the Last of Us podcast, to be honest, was to make this happen. I was like, fine, I'll do this prestige format show. I'm very excited you're here, though. Thank you for taking the time.
Yeah. Again, thanks for having me on. It's congratulations on the Patreon launch. Like,
thank you.
This is a real great new era for you of, you know, sort of independence of paid DLC and free DLC.
And congratulations to you. The first big Naughty Dog film just debuted this weekend at the box office. So congratulations on that. Very
thank
cool.
you. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's jump into it. After all that, we're going to start the show the way we always do, and that is with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week, it's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week, it's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. You can always submit stories for our consideration by sending us an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com or by visiting one of our awesome online communities, one of which is on Discord at 5x5DLC on Discord, the other on Reddit, which is the 5x5DLC.reddit.com subreddit. Fantastic folks over there. Great way to interact with other people who listen to the show. We urge you to stop by. But Arnie, you are our guest, so you get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
I was thinking about it. I mean, why don't we start with Netflix sort of making the BioShock movie, putting that in. A little timely, right? We've got our movie out. That's definitely on the brain right now.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how involved you were in that process or how much you were even able to speak to it, but certainly it's interesting. Netflix put out, or I mean, I'm not sure. Was it Netflix that put out the statement, or was it Take-Two that put out the statement saying
Netflix Geeked, I think.
Netflix Geeked, yeah. So this is happening. This BioShock film, which we've heard about for quite a long time, almost as long as the Uncharted movie.
I remember when Mark Wahlberg was going to star as Big Daddy. That's how long it's been.
Yeah, no, I mean, but no, you joke, but Gore Verbinski was going to direct ages ago. And then other directors, Juan Carlos, friends and Fresnadillo, I butchered that. Yeah, this has been thing that it has been percolating for quite a long time, but it sounds like Netflix is the one who's actually going to do it. And Arnie, I'm curious, I assume that you are a fan of the BioShock game. I certainly am. Do you think that it will make a good movie? Do you think Netflix will do a good job with it? And what would you like to see in a BioShock movie?
Oh, wow. A lot of questions here. Putting me on the spot. You know, I mean, when we look at, like, I think Netflix is killing it in trying to adapt video game properties. I mean, they just launched the Cuphead show on Friday. I know Witcher's basically based on the books, but there's a whole ecosystem, you know, that are definitely game fans and attracted people to the games. Arcane, like, they're doing a really good job at sort of being maybe not faithful adaptations to things, but definitely providing quality ones out there. So that's why this sort of like stuck out to me as far as the news was, because you know, I think they're willing to put the dollars and the effort behind trying to put something real good together for the BioShock world.
Yeah.
As far as, you know, what I think it could be or what I'd like to see. I mean, I think the big thing of what I really appreciate for the BioShock world and especially the first game was that there's layers to the narrative. There's layers of meaning. And I think trying to imbue that in the movie I think that's what's really going to be interesting, is to go, okay, how are we going to take these philosophical concepts, these political concepts, and translate it, make it timely? I mean, we've seen so many people who are taking older material and really making it of a time. And so I'm curious to see, you know, how they're able to make sure that they're making it you know, relevant to the world we're in.
Yeah. No, I think that's so true. I the BioShock universe is dense with that stuff. And I hope that that is a priority in the films. I hope it's not just, you know, a kind of a thrill ride, you know, video gamey kind of movie, because it has that extra layer of real social commentary, which I think is pretty cool. I'm curious from a developer's point of view. I mean, I know that Neil Druckmann was involved in the creation of, or the, you know, shepherding the Uncharted movie to the screen. But what, you know, from the developers that are making these games and you know, so much of their lives and creative input is wrapped up in these game worlds, what is that experience of having someone take your baby and translating it into another medium? Is there trepidation? Is there excitement? What is that like from that perspective?
Well, I think it's always difficult. And again, I definitely have to just speak from my viewpoint on this, because I am not so close to the creation, even though I work at the studio and development. But from my viewpoint, I think it's always an interesting challenge, because you have to recognize that this is a different medium and you want whatever comes out to play to the strengths of that medium. But you also want to feel like it's true to what you've created. And so you always run into, I think everyone's going to run into, how faithful of an adaptation are we going to do this? Are we going to follow the narrative exactly? Or are we going to sort of take liberties? Or are we going to be inspired by it? And I think that's generally at the crux of, as a creator, as a developer, trying to balance all of those needs, and not be so heavy-handed in a way, so that, the whoever it's, the showrunner or the director or the writer, is able to do the work that they do to translate it into the medium that they know best.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the best you can hope for, right? Is that they understand the thing that made the thing successful, and they want to harness that, but then figuring out some way to add something and not just rehash. So hopefully that happens with BioShock. Christian, you know, also this week, we had news that Amazon is signing a first look deal for three properties that I think are pretty interesting properties. Disco Elysium, It Takes Two, which was my personal favorite game of 2021, and Life is Strange, all of which I think sound like fascinating properties to take to another medium. This is with DJ2 Entertainment. And it feels like, you know, between, you know, on the Uncharted movie and Sonic the Hedgehog 2 coming out, and the Halo TV series, and the Last of Us TV series, I mean, this, it really feels like video games are kind of having their moment that comic books had, you know, a decade or more ago, 15 years ago, when, you know, it transitioned from like every comic book movie is terrible to, oh my gosh, people know how to make these movies into something good now. It feels like video games are getting to that point. How do you feel about these properties and BioShock in particular, Christian?
Yeah, I mean, DJ2, I think recently especially, has a really good track record of bringing properties to the screen. Sonic, for a long time, I think was the Academy Award winner pre-pandemic, because it was the only movie that came out, you know, pre-pandemic. Yeah. But also a very fun movie, especially from how it launched of, oh, the look of Sonic is all wrong, to the film coming out. And James Marsden, I think, is charming in almost everything he does. And Sonic 2 looks, I know, Jeff, you don't watch trailers, so I won't talk about it, but looks good. And so I'm excited to see a company that has a history and passion for games continuing and building on those. And these properties themselves, I think Disco Elysium is probably the one I'm most interested in, because it's such a, I don't want to say it's Blade Runner, because it's not, but it's got that feel, right? Like it's this.
Well, it's a film noir as a video game. Yeah.
Right. And it's a world I want to live in, but I am blessed every day to not actually live in. You know, like it's a horrible world, but man, it's such a rich universe and everything about it, like the narrative design and along with the actual story itself, every scene in that game is so rich with defining what that world is and giving that noir film idea. And I think seeing something like Nightmare Alley kind of having that aesthetic, I think, excites me because Nightmare Alley excites me.
Such a good movie. Yeah.
It's really fantastic. And I think the thing that I'm interested in about BioShock, and also for the HBO Last of Us show, which my wife, I've been rewatching Chernobyl with my wife who hasn't watched it before, just because I'm getting excited for the Last of Us HBO show as well. But for that and BioShock, I'm curious, and we can just keep it just to BioShock because it's what's kind of announced right now. And what Arnie was saying about being faithful and what, you know, I'm very curious how Netflix and the folks making it are going to handle the twist because it's such a big part of the game, but it happens very late in the game. But that game's also 20 years old at this point.
Well, also it is, you know, it is sort of inherent to the interactivity of the game that twist lands the way it does. Right. Because yes. I mean, I guess you could still have a movie character, you know, respond to those things. But the fact that I, as the player, did follow the instructions, you know, yes. every time, it felt more impactful.
And I'm curious, you know, like for in The Last of Us, it's not necessarily a twist, and I'm not saying it here just for folks that maybe are going to experience it in a different medium for the first time, but the end of part one of that game had such weight, and people online are jerked. You know, like, does it immediately get spoiled? You know, like, how do you No Way Home save that thing as it goes into a new medium? But it also, I think fans would be upset if BioShock doesn't have, like, Jeff, if it doesn't have that twist, is that satisfying for you? Or does they need to find some way to incorporate that into an impactful way? To me, that I think is kind of the key to so much of the narrative of the first BioShock.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, it certainly was the thing that resonated so profoundly. But I also think, you know, what Arnie said is true, where you want it to be faithful, but also not just retread. You want it to be additive. You want it to build out something, have its own identity in a way as well. And I would hope that, you know, the iconography of BioShock is so strong. Just the world and the idea of this underwater place that has died because you know this experiment that went wrong, and like Arnie said, all the political commentary, I mean political is the wrong word, but just sort of social commentary and what that means as far as the ideologies in play, I think is would make for fascinating content, a fascinating film, regardless of whether it sort of does that particular magic trick, you know.
And the idea of harvesting little sisters, I mean it just yeah. that, like, as a player, you make that choice, and there's a pro con. And I feel like the moral questions that the narrative has up to those points, it's going to be fascinating. And man, I think there's going to be a lot of kids having Big Daddy nightmares for the first yeah. time that haven't experienced the game. I'm super stoked. And I think, you know, as Arnie mentioned, Netflix has done a really solid job of bringing a diverse portfolio of game properties to the platform. If you look at it, it's not like, oh, Netflix does the blank video game properties. It's
yeah.
Runs the gamut in a really cool way. And I don't know when this movie will come out, how many years away we are from it, but it's super exciting to see.
Well, Arnie, I have another question for you. It was so cool watching the Uncharted movie in the theater and seeing that sort of Marvel Studios-esque PlayStation Studios logo come up with, or logo is the wrong word, but the bumper at the beginning, the word I'm looking for, the stinger, with all of, you know, it's you got Kratos and Aloy, and you know, it's got like, it just feels like, oh wow, this is a thing, you know, this isn't just a one-off movie, this is like a thing. And I wonder if you could speak to this notion that I brought up earlier about maybe video games are kind of getting into that place of being actually quality film adaptations.
Well, I think all of our mediums all through history, we're all looking to inspiration from other mediums, and we're trying to be inspired, and we make references, we build upon off of it. And I think I don't want to say that video game movies or entertainment or adaptations have been terrible in the past, because they've clearly been some fun ones. But I think what you're seeing is maybe that there's been a skill that's been gained over the years about taking, how do you take, as what Christian says, how do you take this engagement that really feels like it can only come from the interactive space, and then do that to an audience that's watching, that's a little bit more passive, that's not involved in choices that are being made, or the choices are taken away because it's a linear medium. That is a challenge, I think, with all linear sort of narrative mediums anyway. How do you get people invested in the characters and the story? But I think over time, that skill has been gained to go, oh, I know exactly how to take maybe an interactive medium and present it in this way and still have you fall in love with the characters or hate the characters, still have you invested. So even though if you've been following it, and you see the twist happen, you know the twist is going to show up, that it still lands that impact. I mean, yeah. And think about it for us, like there's tons of movies and TV shows we rewatch. We know what's coming up, and it still lands. And I think that's really what everyone has to work towards in any adaptation or any sort of narrative medium, but I think crucial for adaptations.
Yeah.
I want to get to the world where we've done a complete 180, and it's like, oh, it's the video game tie-in movie. They clearly rushed this one out. And instead of like the game that ties in with the movie, it's the movie that ties in with the game. Like, we got to get a movie out for this. This game's so big.
It's going to happen. Like, I always joke, it's like, think about Hairspray, which was a movie that became a musical that became a movie of the musical.
Right.
We're going to come full circle.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think these properties, I also think that, you know, having production companies like DJ2, where, you know, they know video game properties, and they're doing it smartly and making sure that these properties make sense to go to films. I like these three properties: Disco Elysium, It Takes Two, Life is Strange. All of them sound like awesome. I mean, Life is Strange basically is an episodic TV show, right? And the other two are so cinematic in their presentation as video games that you just can see it immediately. And I think, you know, I'm really excited for the place we're getting to, you know, if we're not already there, where people don't hear video game adaptation and think, oh, it's going to be bad. And I think that's awesome. As fans of video games and fans of these worlds and stories, seeing them in other medium is just going to be great.
Not played It Takes Two, but listened to you know, rave about it, I wonder if it has opportunity to do like a WandaVision style, like every episode is a different genre almost as it tells this story, because the way the game plays with genre and playability and stuff like that, it seems really open to a really cool version of a TV show.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that would be really cool. All right, Christian, what is your story of the week?
Alluded to it. The digital future. It's kind of sad for Nintendo. Well, not sad for Nintendo. Sad for me as a fan of Nintendo. The Wii U and Nintendo 3DS eShop are shutting down next week. As someone who has gone full digital this current gen on my PS5 and Series and Switch, is probably 50-50 at this point. I'm thinking Pokemon Legends is a cart.
Just to be clear, they're not shutting down next week.
Next year. Did I say next week?
You said next week. Yeah. March 2023.
That's what it feels like, Jeff.
Yeah.
Feels it does like feel that.
We're going to blink and it'll be here. But yes, you're right.
Yes. Thank you for that. And the payment, their ability to accept payment, I think shuts down even a little before that. And I think it's an important story because of where we're living in media right now. I think we've talked about it on this show before, about like the idea of ownership of media is kind of potentially a very small window over the other small window of length of media existing. Like the idea that you can own the Mary Tyler Moore Show, it used to just be something that came on at 8 p.m. and if you missed it, you never saw it again. Or yeah. A movie, you could, hopefully they'd bring back, you know, the movie would be in theaters again at the discount theater or something like that, or you'd maybe you'd be on TV, but you wouldn't own the VHS until what, Batman 89, I think, was the first popularized home-owned VHS. And now this idea of not only are some Nintendo games not going to be available digitally, but also some exclusive only released on eShop games for the Wii U and 3DS will be gone, legally purchasably gone.
Evidently, according to the website VGC, they estimate nearly 1,000 digital only games that were released on Wii U or 3DS just will not be available. They just, you cannot get nearly 1,000 games. Now, these are not probably a lot of games you would be able to come up with off the top of your head, unless you're a super fan. There are some, you know, there's a Dr. Luigi in there, and Pokemon Rumble U. Mario and Donkey Kong Minis on the Move. So there's, you know, Pokemon Picross. There's a few in there that I think, you know, just a Dr. Mario Miracle Cure, Chibi Robo Let's Go Photo. These are not, AAA top tier games that are just going to cease to be available. But that doesn't mean that there won't be lots of games that will cease to be available. And this is the future that we live in now.
And on that same line, to bring it back to the other media, like the Marvel Netflix shows are going away. And it's not sure. We don't know yet if Disney's right. going to get those later. But like you go to view Daredevil now and it's gone. You can't buy the DVD of that firsthand. They did release it back when. But I think it's fascinating from a media studies perspective of – you know, I guess, Arnie, like, do you think you should always be able to purchase everything forever? Or is it okay to let some things be long form improv? they exist only in that moment.
I was thinking about it before we're coming in the show and just listening to you talk. And I think we, all media sort of has a lifespan in a way, VHS tapes, and I'm not talking about like the format itself, but like they're going to degrade and they're going to disappear. And you think about like retro games, and there's cartridges start to cost a lot of money because there's less and less of them that are working or still around. I think what you're seeing is the same thing, but it's accelerating because running a digital storefront costs money, and there's all these other concerns that you might need to weigh. But I'm not trying to be a defender of it, but I just see like this is just a natural step in what we see already with it. And I could see that happening. I mean, it'd always be great. I think the big thing is it's like we see all these folks who are doing this great job in sort of creating digital archives. And I think that's being able to preserve our history because, again, all of these games, all of these things, like we built on upon it. It's like how can we continue to preserve these? And I think games ends up being much harder because even computer programs, because it's, you're beholden to a particular platform or an OS. You can't just take a movie print and digitize it and have this digital format that might exist for whatever the next format is to archive it.
I have two anecdotal kind of relations to this story. The first is I just recently moved, as listeners to the show know, and part of the moving process was moving all of my physical media. And I just, because I'm lazy, they've been sitting in a box, all my old Xbox 360 and PS2, PS3, all that.
Not your Wii U, though. Not your Wii U.
Not my Wii U. I'll get to that in a second. But they were all in a box. And this last week, my family was coming into town. And my wife was like, well, let's get this house, and it looking nice for the family to come into town. And so that meant, these ugly boxes in the corner had to be dealt with. So I finally put all of these boxes, these DVD cases into the shelving unit that I had them in the previous house. And in doing that, I kind of retook inventory of all this stuff. And it is crazy to me that there's this like compendium of stuff, of games of a certain era. And then it literally just stops. It just stops because everything I got after a certain point, I got downloaded only.
I just stopped getting physical media. And so there's this like cliff after which there's like three, Xbox One games and like a few PS4 games, but it just everything switched to digital for me. That's how I got everything. And so I have this huge library of Wii and PS3 and Xbox 360 games. So, it occurs to me that this is the kind of thing. So that's the second part of the story, is that my five-year-old, who's obsessed with Mario and all things Mario, I brought this up a little last week, asked me to pull out the Wii U and set it up. And reading this news story was interesting because I had this moment where we, logged onto the Wii U digital store, and I was shocked that it was still available. I was like, oh, wow, you can actually still get stuff on this. I had no idea. But now it made me sad now that it's going to go away, because now my son's like actually playing the Wii U. The Wii U, by the way, getting more use in my house than it had in the entire existence of my ownership of it. Because he's like all about the Wii U now. But it also makes me sad, because that moment of rediscovering this old piece of hardware, to my son who's five, he doesn't view it as old. He doesn't view it as dated. He doesn't view it as less than. It is no different from the Switch or whatever. It's just another way to play the games. And there is something that is lost when it's like, oh, these systems are outdated, they're shut off. There is no moment of rediscovery possible for some of this. And so that does make me a bit sad.
But you are, at least in your case, like they said, you are able to re-download media you already own.
Right.
Which is the good news. So
yeah,
I think this is more saying, hey, if you happen to pick up a Wii U years later and you gift it to someone because it is something affordable and in that degree, or you end up buying it secondhand, that's where you can't build a library from the digital store. But at least you're able to download what you've owned in case you have to, switch consoles or.
Yeah. Until you aren't, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Until you aren't.
Yeah, yeah.
Who knows?
I mean,
but yeah,
we've talked about, and I don't want to go deep on blockchain or NFTs here, but we've talked about them, and I haven't necessarily always been high on them in general, and also how they're currently seem to be used. But I do wonder if part of this, too, is the idea that the shop's shutting down, but also, Jeff, I can't sell you my Pokemon Picross software, right? Because, people don't necessarily get upset that Nintendo did it again. They stopped making Super Mario Brother 3 carts for the NES. They shut that game down. Like at some point, that shop, air quote, right? That thing goes away. Oh, yeah, Naughty Dog did it again. Uncharted 1 on PS3, can't buy it anymore. Annoying. Like no more new carts being but they still exist. Like I can go to GameSpot or GameStop. Golly, I'll always get that wrong. GameStop and get a secondhand copy or trade with a friend or something like that. But for these digital only games, that secondhand reselling of them doesn't exist. So I feel like that kind of amplifies the disappearance, right? In a way that is different for physical media. But as more and more media never exists physically, I think we need a solve for it. And I wonder if maybe to some extent a blockchain future could make sense there in terms of ownership of media. But then we need to decouple that. I'm already spending too long on this. I apologize. But then we need to decouple that.
Christian and his crypto NFT theories again.
No. But we need to decouple that then from owning, right? Because Netflix, I never owned that show to begin with. They're like Game Pass. I never owned that game to be. So then there's that whole digital ownership thing. But anyway, back to the core of it. I think there is a difference of a digital game that you can't resell versus something like an old NES cart that will exist forever as long as someone has one.
Yeah. Well, it's
interesting. I think I did.
I don't know. I think you kind of lost your thread there at some point. No, it's fine. It's fine. It's good. It is interesting to me how quickly we got used to just the flux of Netflix content. I feel like
there's websites that every month are like, here's all the stuff that's leaving Netflix, you know? And we just kind of took it in stride, you know? That's just part of it. It's interesting. This digital medium future where, you know, I think that maybe it's not the next generation of consoles. Well, maybe it's the generation after that, but there's going to be a generation of consoles where it's literally just all, none of it's physically, you know, purchasable. It's just all digital. And I think at that point, you know, it is going to be, we'll be at the whim of these deals and you know, when something is available, when it isn't, will be completely out of our control.
I'll say Game Pass already does that too. And same with PlayStation Now. It's like play God of War now before, you know, it leaves the service, play all the same thing with Netflix. You see those lists of Game Pass games, play them now before they're gone. I think Control just left recently.
But the question, I think the way it will be like video game or the fear of video games is when it's not just like Netflix lost the right to play somebody else's content that you can purchase or view on another service. It's when Netflix goes, like you're talking about with the Marvel shows. It's like when Netflix goes, hey, this original content that you can only watch here, we no longer carry. And at that point, it's like, well, oh, that you just can't watch it? And I think that's what it's going to be like, you know? Anyway, sad about the Wii U because all of a sudden the Wii U is a big part of my life again.
They knew.
All right.
We have activity from a Wii U eShop in Denver. Greg, what should we do about this? Shut it down?
He's downloading everything. What's he doing? Yeah. So interesting this week. You know, some folks listen to the show to get their weekly video game news. And I think this is interesting updates on very high profile games. There were a number of games that we got updates on this week. One of them was from our guest last week, Jeff Grubb, on our show, decided not to break this news here, but on his own show, Grub Snacks, which, unforgivable, frankly.
But also
It is a very good show. On Grub Snacks, our friend Jeff Grubb mentioned that he had gotten some information that Dragon Age 4 is hitting all of its milestones and on track to release in about 18 months. Pretty cool. That's the game that was officially announced in 2017, but evidently was in development since 2015. So very, very cool that we might be able to play that in a year and a half. Ubisoft, which has been going back and forth on whether Skull and Bones is still a game or not, said in its fiscal call that the development is going well on Skull and Bones. In fact, the quote was, they were very happy with the artistic direction and progress of the game. So it sounds like Skull and Bones is still happening. We don't have any expectation of when that game will come out. But, you know, some people thought that it may have been vaporware and just never see the light of day. And then, of course, the game in the longest in development, Dead Island 2, which was first announced back in 2014, evidently has been confirmed as still in development by Deep Silver's parent company, Embracer Group. And they said it will be released some point in the company's next fiscal year, which begins in March 2023. So three long-awaited games, very high-profile games that sound like they're still happening, which is interesting news. But I think for me, since we have vice president at a company who every game they release is very anticipated and very high profile, I would love to get your opinion, Arnie, on, you know, this notion of when to announce a game exists, when to confirm a game exists. How do you play that balancing act of these kinds of games that seem to fall into limbo and takes much longer than they anticipate? Not that Naughty Dog has ever delayed anything.
How do you announce a game on our show right now? Like, that's what I'm wondering.
Were you trying to cue me up here?
Yeah, don't be a Jeff Grubb. Take the opportunity right here, right now.
World exclusive. I mean, I think you end up seeing a lot of different factors that play into it. Because I just want to point out recently, right, you had Respawn EA announced all of these Star Wars titles. You had Blizzard announce their survival horror game because ostensibly we think it's because they need to hire. And how do you hire for a game that people might not know about? Or how do you hire for people who might be interested in a certain type of game unless they know it exists and sort of you create the attractivity of that? But, you know, in maybe more normal circumstances, you know, you're trying to weigh, is this game going to leak? Do we want to make sure that we're in front of that, that we're the ones that are announcing it rather than have it trickle out or have someone's LinkedIn get updated, which totally happens by accident all the time. And it's like, you really want to keep things under wraps, but at some point you kind of just want to make sure that you own that before it gets out by accident. And that's usually, I think for a lot of people, that's usually what drives that. But I think we're seeing a complete change in that where marketing promotional campaigns are being compressed big time. You're seeing 3 to 6 month campaigns instead of 18 month campaigns, but you're also seeing games that, you know, obviously had been announced a long time ago and are in development for quite some time with the amount of time that it takes to come out. So I think it's a lot of, it's just like, you're trying to balance a lot of these different things. And I think it'll be interesting to see what happens in the future now that clearly announcing a title in development publicly, yeah, you're sure you get news, but it helps you get hired, that we might see a lot of that more often. But by contrast, I think about it and you think of Hollywood, you think of films and TV shows, and you can't hide any of that. You can't hide that it's in production, right? And they don't worry about it. You say, yeah, you know, we're working on this. You're going to see all of this news, and it can take a while for it to come out. And we're just along on the ride with it too.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. I've never really thought about that connection before of just like, yeah, everybody knows, you know, that you can look in Variety and just see everything that's in production and people are getting cast and hired and all that stuff. And there's
some secrecy they try, right? Like friend of the show, Dan, his movie per his Twitter, you know, it came out in a way that he did not want that movie, not that he didn't want, I don't overstate it, but it was like released before they were able to get ahead of it. I think Variety had an exclusive and it was like Cloverfield Lane director working on next, and it was like, oh, this is out now. And like they do, like you drive around LA and it's like, you know, you see the little signs for production and it's like Mountain Men, and that's not, they're not making a Mountain Men movie. My favorite kind of inside biz is like, if whenever you walk by production, like, oh, what are you guys making? A mayonnaise commercial. It's like always a mayonnaise commercial, you know, or something.
When's the last time you ever saw a mayonnaise commercial?
That's the bit, right? Something uninteresting, but you're just like, what? Weird. Okay. And you kind of keep moving on. But yeah, casting news does leak out, but then there are a few folks or a few productions that try to hide the ball where it's so-and-so cast and new movie by blah, blah, and it ends up being something else. But it's hard. It's increasingly hard because I think even if people don't accidentally leak it with their own portfolio, it's if you don't do the announcement like Respawn, hey, we're building this team, come work for us kind of thing, you see people combing through companies hire. It's like, oh, whatever, Bungie's hiring a single player narrative. It's like, ooh, Bungie must be making a, you know, whatever. And it's, I don't envy the calm side of things.
We, you know, we're on this podcast, we are in big fans, vocal fans of the sort of Beyonce drop style. Like, here's the game, we're announcing it, and it's going to be out in 6 months. You know, we love that, but I can only imagine that approach must be in tension with working on something and not being able to tell anybody about it. I'm sure that's just got to be kind of a rough part of. If you're working on something, you love it, you're excited about it, you probably want people to know about it and be excited about it too. Is that accurate, Arnie?
There's a part of it. I keep thinking, you know, when a lot of what drove us talking about some of our games early, it's just that sense of relief that we don't have to hide it anymore.
Right.
And at least we could be excited about it, you know, even if it's vaguely or, you know, eventually ramp up to something. Maybe there's a little bit of expectation that we have to deal with in terms of, hey, when's the trailer going to drop or when's news going to come out? And then there's that other bit of stress. But I have to say that there's so much relief with not being able to worry about if it's going to leak and not worry about what you're going to say, or coming onto a podcast and not saying anything or not alluding to anything that someone might come up with.
I think he just confirmed something, Christian.
I think that was, we need to have Danish on the show more often also. That was
All right. Let's get to the games that we have been playing. But first, I want to thank our sponsor, Indeed. Talking about hiring, hey, what a perfect segue into our sponsor. Do you have ambitious hiring goals? No sweat, because you're not waiting for the right candidates to find you. You're finding them first with Indeed. If you're hiring, you need Indeed, because Indeed is the hiring partner where you can attract, interview, and hire all in one place. And Indeed is the only job site where you're guaranteed to find quality applicants that meet your must-have requirements, or else you don't pay. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites hoping to find candidates with the right skills, you need one powerful hiring partner that can help you do it all. Indeed partners with you on every step of the hiring process. Find great talent through time-saving tools like Indeed's Instant Match, assessments, and virtual interviews. With Instant Match, as soon as you sponsor a post, you get a short list of quality candidates with resumes on Indeed that match your job description, and you can invite them to apply right away. Plus, you only pay for quality applications that meet your must-have requirements. Pretty amazing. So check it out. Start hiring right now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/DLC. The offer is valid through March 31st. Go to Indeed.com/DLC to claim your $75 credit before March 31st. Indeed.com/DLC. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us on the playlist. All right. Let us get into our playlist. I know there is a rather large game that came out this week. I played it a little early, talked about it a little last week, but Arnie, I'm so excited that you have also been playing Horizon Forbidden West. What do you think of it?
I was sold. I mean, I love Horizon Zero Dawn, and I've been waiting for this as expectantly as you can be. And I've like, the world is so beautiful. Like, I think coming from a studio where people think that you're pushing tech and you create really realistic environments and animation and everything, to come into someone else who's really killing it. Like, they've just pushed everything forward. The water tech looks so great.
Yeah.
It looks so beautiful. Like, this really feels like, hey, you know, Horizon Zero Dawn was a warm up for you to really flex what you can do in terms of tech and hardware now that you're on the PS5. But by all means, from the videos I've seen, it looks stunning on PS4 too, which is mind blowing just that they're able to pull that kind of thing off.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm so glad to jump back into this world.
Yeah. I mean, it is, you're so right about how beautiful a game it is. One of the things we talked a lot about last week when I was talking about the game is this notion of, does it feel like more of the same, or does it feel like a real additive evolution of the formula? What is your take on that question with this game?
I definitely feels, for me, it feels that it's additive to where they started from. This feels definitely like a sequel. It feels like they've taken all of the learnings from Zero Dawn and gone, how can we refine it? How can we build upon it and still have that familiar feel? Like, it felt real easy to jump back in and have those skills of how to do combat or understand what I have to do to craft or do upgrades. But then just having these added game mechanics or added, different types of ammo, it just feels like, yeah, it's this big iterative step forward for me that they're able to pull off.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I love so much about the game is how everything seems to feed into everything else. And nothing, I mean, other than maybe, not even that. I was going to say, other than maybe the sort of the turn-based minigame that's inside it. But even that is integrated into the larger world, because you're finding figurines in the larger world. So everything seems to be built on the back of that crafting economy and all of the stuff that you're doing, just it all feels valuable. It all feels worthwhile. And there's so much of it. There's so much to do. It is a massive game with where everything feels fun to me. I just think that they knocked it out of the park. Like you said, it's so good. Christian, have you had a chance to play Horizon Forbidden West yet?
I have, not quite as much as I would have otherwise liked because life and family. But what I want to talk about, well, one, I'll echo what you said last week, Jeff, and what I've been able to play so far and what Jeff Grubb said and what Arnie's saying now. Like, I think Jeff Grubb might have called it like an Uncharted to an Uncharted 2 moment. And I kind of question whether it was Assassin's Creed to an Assassin's Creed 2 moment. And for where I am in the game, a few hours, whatever, not deep by any stretch of the imagination, but it does feel like it doesn't feel Assassin's Creed to Assassin's Creed 2, where they kind of rewrote the playbook, but it seems like this was this game, the first game, and now we're going to just keep layering things on top of it, but in a way that remembers what we did before, and in a way that you feel like you can pick it up and play again, and there's some residual muscle memory there with the character, but also is inclusive of new players, where I felt that Frozen Wilds was not necessarily as welcoming. The DLC for Zero Dawn was not necessarily as welcoming for new players, where I jumped back into that, I think the day it came out, but it was months after I had finished the main game. And I was like, this is hard. I don't know what I'm doing. And Forbidden West, I think, quickly but generously brings you into the world. And what I want to talk about specifically this week on this show, and something I don't think we hit on much last week with it, are the game's accessibility features. Because I think with Last of Us Part 2 and then Microsoft with their adaptive controller, I love seeing these things in games more and more, and seeing it at the outset, the beginning of the game with Forbidden West, there were some options in there that I think are great for the inclusivity of gaming and bringing more people into the fold and making sure that everyone can play or more people can play. And also specifically what I want to talk about is gyro aiming, because I love it. It's in Fortnite again now with an update, if your controller supports it. So everywhere but just Xbox. Also with flick stick and gyro aiming. And then Horizon bringing gyro aiming, you know, back and having it be there from the beginning is absolutely phenomenal. And I think a real difference maker in terms of how the game plays and feels. And so I just wanted to applaud Guerrilla for kind of bringing all of that stuff into the game and hopefully letting new players experience Aloy's world as well.
Explain how that works, gyro aiming.
Sure. So gyro aiming, there's a couple of different ways that you can do it. And right now, the default when you turn it on, the default in Horizon Forbidden West is that it's kind of a finesse. So when you go into aim, left trigger to aim, and the aiming reticle comes up, you still can use right stick. I'm using default control scheme here, right stick to, you know, bring your cursor over where you want it to be. And then you tilt and turn your controller to kind of line up that, get that headshot, right? Like you use the right stick to get it onto the body, and then just a subtle little tilt of your actual controller, your DualSense controller, gives you that precision. It's a lot like using a mouse. And so the update that was in Fortnite's last patch, also shout out to Chloe, who I got a Victory Royale with. Nate, you suck. Let me rephrase. I suck when I play as Nate in Fortnite. In Fortnite, it is, the options are kind of through the roof with how dialed in you want it to be. Where with flick stick, it basically turns your right stick into a quick tap, turn around behind you, like the Resident Evil 4, you know, full 180. So if you hit the stick backwards, your character will do a full 180. Then if you stay on the stick, you have the finesse of the control to move around. But almost all of your aiming, your right stick, is done by using your controller. And so with a DualSense or a DualShock 4 or a Switch Pro controller, I've watched videos of folks that are more experienced with that control scheme than I am. And it seems to be as precise as a mouse. Like you have that fidelity level of control. And it's something that I feel like Nintendo did you know, waggle, like way back when, kind of pointing. We didn't love it then. And then Splatoon has it still, Splatoon 2, but people were kind of iffy on it because you didn't have full control. You couldn't do X axis. I forget. Splatoon 2. Oh, gosh. I think it's X axis. It's only Y. One or the other. Someone's yelling at me right now. But now people are, and before as well, are diving into this, I think, kind of forgotten tech. And to bring it back to Horizon Forbidden West, to have it be there at the beginning as one of these features that, you know, you can opt into, I think it's really additive. And for folks also in terms of the accessibility nature of it, it, in my opinion, allows more people to play who might not otherwise have the ability to dual stick the same way that is required for, you know, the high level of play that games like Horizon Forbidden West can require. And when it feels good, as you get used to it, I think it feels really, because you're not, you know, you're not a 90s video game commercial kid, you know, playing the game. It's just subtle movements of the controller can line up headshots, and it's awesome.
It's cool. I've never tried it. I gotta give that a shot. And I'm excited for you to play more of the game, Christian, because I can't wait to talk more spoilery about the story, because it really has some cool surprises and some awesome set pieces that just blew my mind. So, I mean, it's truly amazing. But I want to ask you, Arnie, I don't know if you got to play the game pre-release. I forgot to ask Jeff about this last week, but it seems that they have patched this out with the day one patch. But for a while when I was playing it pre-release, I think, I don't know if I got a bug or if there was a general bug, because I didn't hear anybody else mention this, but there was something weird going on with all of the eyes of all the characters, because you have these incredibly photorealistic characters. I mean, every NPC in the game looks like a human being with makeup on and costumes. You know, it is an amazing level of near photorealism with the human characters. But they had this weird thing where Aloy's eyes kept like rolling back in her head, and all the characters she talked to, sometimes their eyes would just go crazy from the left to right, but not in a cartoonish way, not in a like clearly that's a bug, but like almost it could have been intentional, but it's a little too much, and it really bugged me for the longest time, and I think they patched it out. I don't know. Did you have any of that experience, Arnie?
If there was a patch, I probably came on right after it, because I did not get a chance to play it as early as you, because as Christian said, life got in the way a little bit last week.
Yeah. No, I get that. I forgot to ask Jeff about it. I was just curious if it was just me or everybody, because it was such a funny thing, is you have this incredibly beautiful game and all the characters look like they're rolling their eyes at each other. Like, you know, Aloy, every time she says anything, she's like, oh yeah, that's fine. Anyway, that's Horizon Forbidden West. See, that's why so many folks decided to join our Patreon, because of insightful commentary like that.
Maybe you didn't turn on motion control, but maybe gyro aiming, but maybe you turned on like sarcasm filter.
Yeah.
So it
yeah.
was like, gyro, we need to go west.
Gyro sarcasm. We need to go west. Oh, it's so forbidden. Yeah. all right, Arnie, you got a lot of other stuff on your playlist. Where do you want to go next?
Let's talk about Ali Ali World, because I would have not picked it up if it wasn't for both Christian talking about it and someone at work, one of my coworkers, Rochelle, also talking about just Ali Ali in general. I probably would have never picked it up otherwise, and I am absolutely in love with every single thing that Roll 7 did with this game. A little background, it was actually Tony Hawk's Pro Skater that brought me back into gaming. I started to lapse a little bit at the end of the N64 PS1 era. And I was off skiing with my parents. It had rained, so there was no skiing or snowboarding to be done. And some kids had a PS1, were playing Tony Hawk Pro Skater. And I was like, oh, I'm sold. Obviously, everyone knows, right? Like, Tony Hawk Pro Skater is a great game. But just skateboarding games have been like a big thing for me. I was all super excited and super into skate when it came out. But yeah, I didn't click into Ali Ali or Ali Ali when it came out. But yeah, hearing those two recommendations, I'm sold. Like I play it all the time. I double dipped on it. I have it on my PlayStation. I have it on my Switch. I play it more on my Switch more than anything else. And I suck at manuals, which is really unfortunate. But I like the art style is so good. They're not puns, but you know, like Nirvana and like all of these things, like it's so wholesome in a way. There's a comment early on, I think in, I don't even remember what the islands are called, but the tree one, the forest one, where, you know, there was a joke about late stage capitalism and consumption and how something's sustainable. And it's like, oh, this is like so smart in such an amusing way. It's so great.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so charming. As somebody who loves 3D skateboarding games, what's your take on 3D versus a 2D skateboarding game like Ollie Ollie World?
I never really even thought about it that differently, because this has all, like, there is depth to their worlds, even if you can't go around, and you're already hooked into the exact same stuff, which is how can I put together the best line possible? How can I string these tricks together? And so you're not even thinking about it in that way for me. And I think that got blown open once I started watching replays of these guys, these people who have like million point runs. And I'm just like, I can't even do this. But I think that's what broke open. It was like, oh, there's just so much here, even in this plane, the mechanics, the desire that you want to do is exactly the same, that it doesn't make a difference for me. But yeah. Again, it's like their art style, the worlds are so rich, the different environments, and what they bring to the table are so rich that, you're just totally immersed in that.
Yeah, it really is a high skill cap game. I mean, I am rubbish at Ollie Ollie World, rubbish, but I still have fun. Right. And it, even just like bumbling my way through a level, I still have a really good time. And you're right. All of those little feedback bits, you know, the sounds, the animations, the art style, all of it just feels very satisfying and very zen in what could be a very frustrating game, a game that is built around doing something over and over and over until you get it right. You know, I was never a guy who played the trials games, the motorcycle games, or any of those games where it's like, just keep doing it until you can get it. But for some reason, Ollie Ollie World, like all of the aesthetic choices, all of the way the game is presented, just relieves that anxiety and that tension for me. I totally agree with you.
I think some of it's the humor in there though, right? No. It's the humor and the little bit of narrative that they have in there, where it doesn't matter how frustrating it is, because, or how much you've beaten your head against the wall, because you keep, I mean, in my case, you keep hitting X to restart the level when you're on a really good run. But it's got that great balance with how difficult it is, because you're going into customization. You've got all of these other aspects that are just also immensely satisfying.
Are you playing it with a pro controller on the Switch? I feel like on the regular Switch Joy-Cons, you'd probably kill your hands.
No, I'm playing it on the Joy-Cons, because that's the whole reason why I double dipped, is like, this is my, you know, I'm doing it for half an hour before bed, or I'm sitting at having breakfast and I want to pick this up. So
right. It's
that, not really travel, but traveling within my house.
Way to play. Yeah, gotcha. Travel from the kitchen to the, yeah, gotcha. I worry about your fingers, but I understand. Speaking of games that are challenging, you also have been playing Sifu.
I have been. I suck at that game. In counterpoint to how I feel, it doesn't matter at all around the world, I suck at that game. I always age up so quick, but I love what they're trying to do there.
Yeah.
Slow Clap did a great job sort of creating this world too, and sort of the feel of it. But I am no good at these combo melee games in general, like fighting games, right? But this is a little bit more evolved. I just suck.
I mean, I'm not much better. It's funny how I get into these things where I'm like, I'm going well. And then I'll like age 30 years in one short span. And I'm like, that's rough.
I remember my first run, I think I was like past 50 by the time I made it past Stash. And I was like, I'm never going to get anywhere in this game.
Yeah. Christian, you gave Sifu a try recently, didn't you?
No, I was texting you about it, lamenting that it's not a Game Pass game, which I texted you saying, like, I hate saying this, but like, I wish it was, because I want to play it, but it's also in the month of too many games where I was already playing other, you know, games that I got.
There it is. Sometimes it's slow, you know,
that I got early and was like, well, I'm going to play these so I can talk about them on embargo, blah, blah, blah. I'm very excited about Sifu again now because they've mentioned that they're going to put an easy mode in. And I am very excited to play on that easy mode. I am not too proud. I think it looks beautiful. I want to get in there and bash some guys around. But what kept me from it is that kind of rogue type, you know, idea that there are very few games in that genre that have really, really clicked with me. So I worry about, you know, my controllers.
Yeah, but you love those old brawlers, you know, you love.
I do. I know.
And it has that DNA in it, man. It feels like those old games, Double Dragon and all that, you know.
I will get to it. I just haven't yet. To Arnie's point about Ollie Ollie World, though, in muscle memory and controllers, there are parts where I'm trying to pull off something very specific in Ollie Ollie World, and my muscle memory of this is where I mess up, so I push X to restart, keeps happening. And then I pull the thing off and immediately just hit X. And I'm like, oh,
no. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You praise that quick restart until you curse it.
Yeah. They need the, you just landed this, bro. Are you sure? Like a little pop.
Yeah. You're doing great right now. That's funny. All right. What else is on your playlist, Arnie?
So I've been playing a lot of like bite-sized moments of a lot of games that are very much like deck building or roguelite type games. And I was thinking about it. It seems like my play style these days, and I think, you know, we think about as we grow up and like how differently you're playing games. And I think that was one of the questions for Parting Gift that I saw on Patreon was, you know, how are your gaming habits change? And for me, I think it's like I go real deep in one game. Usually that's on console on a TV, and I end up picking up these other games. So I've been rotating through, and Ollie Ollie World's one of them. But on top of that, I've been rotating through Dicey Dungeons and Grifflands and the original Darkest Dungeon, all of which have a lot of very similar type feels. Two of them are very much deck building games. Another one's sort of like a roguelike type game. And they're great. Like I love playing them for half an hour, 45 minutes or an hour at a time, and just being able to put that away and then come back to them whenever I feel like it later on.
I haven't tried Dicey Dungeons yet, but man, I love Griftlands. I think that game is so clever and does such really cool stuff with how it kind of uses deck building to accomplish things that isn't just combat. I think it's really, really cool. Darkest Dungeon, I had a fling with, but man, that game is just too brute. It feels unfair at a certain point. It's just like, it's messed up, I think.
I felt that way when I first started playing it, and I totally bounced off of it for, I don't know, probably a couple months, and then came back. And then I think it's the same thing that you run into with the Soulsborne games, where you take it really seriously, and every single death or every single sort of miss thing, it feels like it has this big impact on you. But if you can get past and you can let go and you're like, you know what, it doesn't matter because it doesn't. I'm just going to have fun with it. That's what happened with Darkest Dungeon. It's just like, I'm not going to worry too much about everyone dying or the fact that I've run out of money, or I'll just restart the game because the dungeons are all different layouts anyway.
Yeah.
And I'll just come back and try it. And that's where I ended up like really getting sold into playing that game all the way through.
I got to get in the zen of that, because I would like feel like I'm doing so good, and then be like, nope, one of your dudes is insane and wants to attack his own teammates. And I'm like, that's just not fair. It's just arbitrary. Anyway, but yes.
You great want dungeons games, with like a few lanterns. Like,
yeah, not the darkest dungeons.
Yeah.
Give me a darker dungeon.
Well, that's the thing. I haven't even tried that. I mean, I don't even know if you even tried that, but there's one of those where depending on how, like you get all those extra stats if you don't light the torch.
Yeah.
So if you are exploring in the darkest version of the dungeon, and everyone's going super insane.
Yeah.
But it's like that thing where we think about, Grifflands or Dicey Dungeons where there's a deck building element. What I love about all these games is that how they're layering all these mechanics on top of each other. And Darkest Dungeon was one of the first ones I think that really caught me that way, because it's like, oh, it's a little bit of this Lovecraftian horror, but it actually has a psychological effect on your characters and the light and everything. It's like, that's another balance thing I've got to work out on top of their skills, on top of keeping them alive. That type of stuff's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And I totally respect those games, and they're going for something really cool and interesting. I'm just not, you know, I don't have the constitution to handle it sometimes. awesome. Well, that is Arnie's playlist. Christian Spicer, let's take a look at your playlist. But first, I want to take a look at our sponsor, Mailgun. Mailgun is how modern companies work with email. The platform's ease of use, world-class support, and powerful APIs empower smart development teams to reach real customers at scale with a data-driven approach so their organization can grow faster. Send and track your transactional and marketing messages effortlessly. Prevent fake signups and remove invalid email addresses from your list quickly. Partner with email experts to improve your email deliverability and drive higher conversion rates. Today, Mailgun helps hundreds of thousands of companies and leading brands around the world provide connected experiences and drive smart results. Mailgun empowers companies around the world to solve complex communication problems through its powerful email API and intuitive email marketing solutions. Mailgun controls the entire email lifecycle from the pre-deployment through development of over 240 billion emails a year for companies like DHL, Wikipedia, Toast, Lyft, and Microsoft. Our send time optimization capability automatically finds the ideal send time for each and every individual on your list at the time that they are most likely to engage. It's never been easier to build connected experiences. Start sending with Mailgun today. Visit mailgun.com to learn more. That's mailgun.com to learn more. Christian, what is on your playlist?
Well, in addition to Horizon Forbidden West, I took part in the show, MLB The Show 2022. They ran a tech test because, as mind-blowing as it was last year to play the show on my Xbox via Game Pass day and date, this year, The Show 2022 is also coming to Switch. So when they announced a free tech test to play on any of the consoles, I was like, I gotta see what this game looks like on Switch. Like, that is 100% how I'm going to play this game. Because not only is it coming to Switch, it also has cross progression and cross play, which I think is awesome. Like, Arnie, I'm glad you talked about Olly Olly World on Switch, and I'm glad that it runs well on Switch, because as an OG Olly Olly Vita player, I also I got a code for PC, but I also bought it on Switch because that's kind of how I'm used to. Like, Jeff, the Joy-Cons are bad. Arnie, don't comment here. The Vita analog nubs, not great. They're also very little, but no cross progression. So I'm kind of playing two different versions of Olly Olly World, which is fine. I love the game. It doesn't bother me. But for a game like MLB The Show, which is unlocking and packs and what do they call their, not franchise, golly, doesn't matter. I'm going to gloss over it until I play the real game. But all of the modes in it, if I'm going to be investing those kinds of hours in this game, I want to make sure that it carries over. But now that it can carry over and I can take it handheld mode and grind stuff out in bed, Diamond Dynasty. There we go. Thanks, Brain. And I can do that in bed for a little bit or play a friend online for a little bit. It's very, very exciting. So I say all that to say all the positive. On Switch, which I'm going to show a little gameplay here on the stream, Nintendo showed what Switch gameplay looks like. In this video, that has to be docked mode. Because in handheld mode, it's a Switch game, right? Like that's the problem. I love that it's out. So I'm not knocking like the fact that it's a Switch game, but when I'm used to playing it on my big boy consoles and I'm used to what that looks like, to then play it on Switch handheld mode, I was like, oh, am I a graphics snob? like the whole game's here. I mean, not in the tech test, it wasn't, but like the whole, I can do all the things and everything I love about this franchise is here and it exists and I can keep doing this and I can take it with me on the road and then have my save carry over to this other thing. And the whole time I was just like, that's not what Oral Hershiser looks like.
It doesn't pass the Hershiser test?
It did not. It did not. That was my diamond card too. It did not pass the Hershiser test. And then the other nit I have with it so far, and I hope it gets ironed out because this was just a tech test. I'm by no means a MLB The Show all-star, right? Like, I think the last one I put any serious time in was the Ken Griffey, was the more expensive. Yeah, like the cover athlete. He had the backwards hat, awesome cover. I had to do that because Ken Griffey Jr. is awesome. And I put a lot of time into that version of the game. But on Switch, in this tech test that I was playing against someone not on Switch, at the end of the first inning, I was down 7-0. I got my butt handed to me. And then I read online that it seemed to be that there was a lot of, not a lot, I mean, relative for the type of game that you would want it to be very precise, that there was input lag when you were playing on Switch compared to other consoles. And I don't know if that was happening to me or not, but if anyone asks, that's what was happening to me because I was missing everything and my pitches were missing and I wasn't making contact when I wanted to. So I'm kind of a mixed bag on it. I love that it exists, but my gameplay hands-on experience with the Switch version and handheld mode left me, you can't look a free horse in the mouth, gift horse in the mouth. I feel like I kind of was. I'm like, this is so cool that I have all these stats and features and gameplay modes available to me when it comes out and I can save it. But is it a monkey's paw? You know, did I make the wrong wish? And should I just, again, because like Arnie for Ollie World, it's not as if right now I'm going places. It's like me being so lazy to be like, I don't want to turn on my PS5 to play.
Well, it occurs to me that, has anybody ever said this before? It occurs to me that the Switch is the fortune cookie of video game consoles because you just add in bed at the end to everything.
Yeah. Yes.
You can play MLB The Show in bed.
I think my wife will understand if I just like, I got a new TV. It lives on the end of our bed. Also, I bought a scalped PS5 off of eBay. Why did you do all this? Well, have you seen MLB The Show on handheld mode? But I'm very excited for it. And I probably, knowing me, I probably will get also the Switch version because I love cross progression is huge in a game like this. And like, you know, Destiny now with Witch Queen coming out and how they brought cross progression. And I think any game where you're spending that kind of hours playing it and it's available across systems, I'm a big fan of cross progression whenever it happens.
Yeah.
And kind of like mentioning seeing the Sony logo, studios logo in front of Uncharted, it still blows my mind to turn on my Switch and see that. Like, there's Aloy on my Switch.
Yeah.
The future is now, and it's very weird.
Very cool. My playlist obviously had a lot of Horizon Forbidden West on it still. I just want to play that game all the time. I want to do everything in that game. I spend an inordinate amount of time playing the mini game, turn-based game in the middle. It's so ridiculous. Like how I'm like, I should be progressing in the story, but I also want to win. I want to win this match with this NPC that's sitting in this tent. It's so dumb. Anyway,
you're describing my experience with Final Fantasy X, where I must be the only person that loved Blitzball and ended up spending all this time playing Blitzball instead of finishing the game. So
yeah, I love that that's become a thing where like, let's have a cool turn-based game inside our giant role-playing world
Now I know why the characters were rolling their eyes at you, though, Jeff. Because you weren't saving the world.
It's so true. They're like, this guy again with the board gamer. Anyway, we did get this email sent to us this week at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. This comes to us from Kai, who says, hey, guys, longtime listener here. You know, sometimes you record DLC and big news happens afterwards, and that's kind of funny. Cut to everyone hearing about Street Fighter VI right now, I guess, after we already put this episode out. But anyway, Kai goes on to say, but also, sometimes one of the biggest game launches of the year happens a few days before recording DLC, and you don't even speak one word about it? What's going on? Lost Ark, Kai says. Kai, you're right. I'm here to remedy that situation. I downloaded the Lost Ark, which is a massively multiplayer action RPG, a Korean game that has finally hit Western shores. And it had, I think, 1.2 million concurrents on Steam last week. And we didn't mention it at all because we were so wrapped up in Horizon Forbidden West, which I think is a legitimate excuse. But I got into Lost Ark, and I'm here to tell you, that game has a really great first impression, at least for a guy like me. Lost Ark is a sort of what if Diablo and World of Warcraft had a baby. It is, you know, ostensibly a action RPG like Diablo, isometric, which, by the way, my favorite perspective in all of video games is isometric perspective. I love it. I grew up with it. I love it. There's
Take
something
that
just
metric
warming.
Metric system.
What?
Take that metric system and other types of metric.
Isometric, my favorite metric. No, my favorite perspective. It's I don't know. There's just something. I mean, obviously, I love all kinds of games, and I love, you know, 3D worlds and all that stuff. But there's just something that warms my soul when I get to look down on the thing in that perspective. I don't know. Works for me. Anyway, you don't see a lot of MMOs in that perspective, and this very much it is an MMO, as much as it has the trappings of a game like Diablo, in that you are clicking a lot and you are just wiping out hordes of enemies. I mean, if you think about a game like WoW or Final Fantasy 14 or EverQuest or any of the, you know, classic MMOs, you get in real trouble if you pull more than two or three mobs at a time most of the time. You know, there's obviously trash mobs you can mop up, but this is a game much more like Diablo, where it's just sending hordes of bad guys at you and you're just mowing through them. And mowing through them in very satisfying ways. Lost Ark, the real hook to this game is A, it's very pretty, and B, they nailed the sensation of being completely OP all the time. You have a bunch of skills at your disposal. You're just kind of popping them on cooldown all the time. There's a ton of classes in this game. I think 14. There's a bunch of classes, and they all have subclasses. So each one feels like a completely distinct thing. Like, for example, I was playing a lot of the Gunner class, which has like a bow and arrow subclass, or one where you switch between three different kinds of guns, like a shotgun, pistols, and like rifle, or this heavy gunner class where you're holding this Final Fantasy style massive, like a human being couldn't lift it, huge gun, a Monster Hunter style, you know, huge gun that you can turn into a tripod. It just so wildly different subclasses from the gunner class. So they really do feel like individual distinct classes, and you have to level them up individually as well. All of them incredibly satisfying, visceral, just laying weight. All of the things you do feel like the coolest, you know, scorched earth, awesome effects, every single attack you do, every single special move. So just the pure mechanics of playing the game, very satisfying, which is a good thing because there's not much else meat on that bone. I mean,
I heard
story,
the, like the raids or whatever, what are the dungeon?
Yes. Like I said, the pure mechanics, like the play. I mean, I haven't gotten into the end game
by any stretch. So I'm very early on in Lost Ark. So take my opinion with a grain of salt. As I said, it gives a very good first impression, at least to me it did. But it is, the story is pretty ham-fisted and not interesting. The quests are very banal and straightforward. You know, it's not going to win any awards for storytelling. That said, you do really cool things. There are epic quests in what you are accomplishing. It's just a sort of delivery. The framework of that storytelling is pretty simplistic and not very engaging. So the good thing is the meat of what you do, the substance of what you do, which is click a lot of things and watch them explode, is very fun. It's very, very fun. And the game is really pretty. The game is massive. There's so much to do. And it's been out for like, I don't know, 3 or 4 years overseas. So, you know, there's tons of content and it's been sort of, you know, play tested, for lack of a better term. And I mean, I'm in it. I'm digging this game a lot. I mean, it is so pretty on so many levels. It has so many cool little flourishes. Everything feels epic.
It's free, right?
Like free. Not,
so what are, have you experienced how it, is it packs? Is it,
you can buy
stamina, like boosts. What's the,
you can buy boosts, which are not pay to win. They really are just pay to spend less time doing stuff. You get, you know, boosts that up your experience that you get from things, or let you fast travel, or, what else do they do? You know, there's just sort of things that speed up your leveling process or let you play more, you know, quickly, kind of soften the edges of certain things that you need to do. But none of it makes you any particularly more powerful than another person who's not paying for anything, which is good. And then there's lots of aesthetic stuff, right? There's mounts and doodads and hats and cool things that you can buy in the store. So there's, you know, a huge store full of all that stuff. But you could play this game entirely without paying a single red cent, and I don't think you would have any kind of a less than experience than anybody that was. It would take you more hours to level up a character than somebody that was paying to boost. But other than that, I think you would, you know, I think they're doing the free-to-play model pretty well and pretty smartly. And pretty fairly, which is to their credit, you know, because this is Amazon Studios that's publishing it. So, you know, sometimes you hear Amazon, you go, "Ooh, they're going to ticky-tack me to Kingdom Come," you know, but not here, not in this case, at least not yet. But Lost Ark, I mean, it just doesn't feel like most MMOs. Most MMOs feel very samey. This from its perspective, which is very different, to the number of enemies, to the way you play things. And I mean, I have friends that love playing Diablo because they can just sort of zen out and have a good time and not have to think too hard. And I kind of feel like that's what this game does. I mean, I guess there's elements of that with any MMO where you're sort of just doing your dailies or whatever and you're zenning out. But this one, you really do just, you can just muscle your way through almost anything until you get to the big bosses, but it's just so satisfying to do that. You're just seeing this symphony of destruction on the screen, and you're marching through your cooldowns and just hitting whatever skill is off cooldown, barely ever using your basic attack because you have 8 skills plus an ultimate all the time. It's fun and it's free, so it's hard not to recommend at least giving it a shot if these type of games are your jam. So that's Lost Ark, and thank you, Kai, for forcing me to give it a shot, because I like it. I like it a lot. We'll see if it has stands the test of time. I mean, again, it's leveling to 50 before you get to end game. I have not done that. I've heard end game is actually pretty good, but I haven't played with friends. I haven't played in a group. But it's actually a pretty darn good solo MMO experience, which is also not you know, not super common.
Right now, Jeff's family is emailing Kai. Dear Kai, we do not thank you for recommending Lost Ark to Jeff. Yeah.
Lost Ark, more like Lost Jeff, am I right? Anyway.
How do they balance the feeling of being OP with like at least providing you enough challenges so that, you know, you feel like you're challenged as you're progressing? Well,
that's either a problem or a benefit depending on how you look at it. For the most part, there isn't much challenge. And then these challenge spikes will happen, which is you'll get to a big boss. And I hear that the end game is much more challenging and you have to really work together and do cool stuff. I haven't experienced that, but it really is like mowing through the trash mobs. But the mowing through the trash mobs is just viscerally entertaining. It is just this sea of bad dude, you know, demons and things rushing at you from all sides. And you're just, you know, unleashing these massive attacks on them. Truly, like, you get new skills every five levels, but you start out with incredibly devastating, awesome stuff. I mean, it's not like most MMOs where it's like you can hit and then, you know, level five, you get a fireball. You know, it's like the mage class starts with like eight AoEs, you know, it's just like, it's pretty cool. So, you know, depending on your point of view, that can be a downside in the sense that it is more of this Zen experience. It isn't super challenging in the leveling process, or at least hasn't been for me, until you get into, you know, you hit a boss and then the boss is like a total, you know, damage sponge and it just takes a lot of doing. You have to avoid attacks and stuff. But I find it to be very, very satisfying and fun, regardless of that.
That's great. Have you tried the PvP?
I have not. I have not.
Is that your thing? Have you?
Not really. I mean, I got into PvP with WoW for a long time and got really into it to the point where I was like buying new keyboards and mice to like have buttons that were more accessible and all that. And I got really down the rabbit hole of that stuff. I bought like four different mice. I'm left-handed too. So it was like there are very few mice that work for me. Anyway. More information than you needed. But no, the short answer is no, I have not tried the PvP for Lost Ark yet. All right. Let me thank our final sponsor, which is Squarespace. Squarespace. You know them. You love them. They have sponsored this show since the beginning, and they continue to do so. And I continue to be very happy to recommend Squarespace for anybody that needs a website for any reason, whether you are showcasing your work, whether you're blogging or publishing content, whether you're selling products or any kind of service, whether you are promoting a physical business of some kind, or just announcing an upcoming event, anything that you need a website for, Squarespace can make a beautiful website so simple. You can make it yourself. You don't have to pay somebody. You don't have to learn HTML. You don't have to stress. You can make it yourself and make it stand out, make it beautiful, make it unique. What you do is you start with their powerful, beautiful templates that are created by world-class designers, and then you just customize. It's so simple. You drag and drop. You just fiddle with stuff. Make it your own. Make it interesting. Make it unique. Do you need e-commerce? Do you need to sell something? A couple clicks, all of a sudden, your website is a storefront. So simple. Everything is optimized for mobile right out of the box. They have analytics to help you grow in real time. They have built-in search engine optimization. There's never anything to patch or upgrade ever. It's just the easiest way to have a website. Why not check it out? Plus, if you run into any problems, 24/7 award-winning customer support. Check it out. Squarespace.com/Jeff sent me. You'll get a free trial. You don't even have to give them a credit card. And when you're ready to launch your site, then you use offer code JeffSentMe, JeffSentMe, all one word. Save yourself 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain. They also sell domains. In fact, I just bought dlcpod.com, which isn't set up yet, but I bought it on Squarespace and I used promo code JeffSentMe to get myself 10% off because I'm a smart person who takes advantage of deals.
So you do it too. Squarespace.com/Jeff Sent Me. Promo code Jeff Sent Me to save yourself 10% off. All right. That's going to do it for this episode of DLC. Thank you, Arnie Myers, for being here. Totally appreciate it. I know it was a long time in coming. I hope it lived up to the hype.
It was amazing. It did live up to the hype. We announced it 7 years ago. We finally released it.
Right. That's right. Yeah. Still in development, our guesting of Arnie on the show. Anyway, Arnie, tell folks where they can keep up with you and the things that you do online.
You can find me on Twitter. It's at Arnie Meyer. Pretty easy to find. And, you know, obviously I work at Naughty Dog. So, you know, please check out the great stuff that everybody at the studio is doing at @naughty_dog. Best place is going to be on Twitter for both of us.
Very, very cool. Can't wait to see the next thing that is announced. Pregnant pause for you to tell us anything.
So what happens when you get a PR professional on a podcast?
Yeah, he's very media trained, ladies and gentlemen. Very media trained. Christian Spicer, what about you? What do you got going on this week?
Well, I'll be going to LinkedIn.com/NaughtyDogCareers to peruse who might be posting spoilers for their next game to get those hot scoops. Oh, they hired a multiplayer isometric camera designer. Oh, isometric. Okay.
Christian doesn't know video game jobs.
They posted a person who does designing. Looks like this is going to be designed. Twitter's the best way. @Spicer, SPICER. I have a newsletter. You can find it at tinyletter.com/Christian Spicer, where I do long form writing about video games. I do about one or two a month. This past one was about how February has not released a game of the year in over a decade. And I'm curious if this February will be the February that breaks that trend. This is still a good year of games. And then I'm talking to you and some fun friends about movies here this next coming week as well, Mr. Kanata.
That's right.
You can find at The Film Cast.
Christian's going to be on The Film Cast as our guest talking about, this is like synergy right here, talking about Uncharted, the movie. So we're going to have everybody's interest all aligned in one magical moment. Tuesday night, so it'll be out on Wednesday.
One tease now, just as I saw it by myself, and my wife goes, should I watch it? And I said, no, Tom Holland looks very ugly in it. You don't need to see it. You're fine. He's very ugly. Don't worry about it.
He absolutely does not have his shirt off in one of the scenes.
Yeah, doing, I think, pull-ups, as I recall correctly.
Not waste of time. Don't watch it.
Yeah. It's like, oh, he's still got the spider body. He definitely still has the spider body. Anyway, you can check that out at wherever you get fine podcasts. Been looking for The Film Cast. Also, I do a long-form Dungeons & Dragons show, a storytelling show. Oh, my goodness. Last week's episode was a humdinger. It was the final reveal of what this entire story that we've been telling for over 100 episodes, 110 episodes. We got to the 110th episode, and I finally spilled the beans. The episode is called The Vulnerable World, and you'll see why if you check it out. Anywhere you get podcasts, you can listen to the audio version of The Dungeon Run, or you can find us on YouTube by searching for The Dungeon Run, or you can watch on Twitch, twitch.tv/The Dungeon Run. I also do the fan-controlled football show at twitch.tv/FCF, and We Have Concerns, which is the comedy science show I do with Anthony Carboni. You can find that at wehaveconcerns.com. All right. So this is where we do parting gifts. But now patrons are going to get an extended special episode of the parting gifts with Arnie. Arnie's going to hang out with us and talk about some recommendations. He's going to recommend a book, a couple of podcasts. Christian is recommending a comic book, and I am going to recommend a bunch of stuff, including a monster truck rally that I went to. What? Check that out by becoming a patron over at patreon.com slash
DLC Pod. We are super grateful to our patrons. Thank you for supporting the show. All of our Hype Train patrons will get individual mentions here next week. Thank you all for supporting the show and making it possible for this show to continue. We'll be back next week. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.